Interview session number 3 with James, April 5th, 2008. Copyright 2008. Wingmakers. All rights reserved. For the third and final part of the interview. I'm Mark Hempel, and I'm here with James. And if you're listening to this and you haven't heard parts 1 and 2, you might want to go back and listen to those before taking on this one. And just as in the second interview, I'm going to skip the background information. But again, that's all contained in the first interview, so you might want to go back and listen to that if you're interested in the how James came to Minneapolis and so forth, how this interview took place. So I'm reminding you, James, that I'm going to ask some more personal questions on this section. So if any of these get too personal for you, just tell me.
Yes, I understand. Let's see where spirit takes us.
I guess I should mention that we're just letting these interviews kind of go organically. I'm recording onto my hard disk, and I'm really not worrying too much about editing things at this stage. So this is kind of a free-flowing interview. Okay? All right. I guess maybe the most basic question I get, James, is who you are. So let's start with that one. Who are you?
Well, that's an open-ended question, isn't it? Well,
yeah, no, I'm not trying to interrupt, but I mean that in terms of your background. You know, where did you grow up? Kind of family did you have? Did you have, siblings, that sort of thing?
Yes, well, I grew up in Spain, in the outskirts of Barcelona. I had a normal childhood, at least for those in my town. I suppose I had some advantages, as my father was a scientist. So I had access at an early age to books and lectures on the various sciences.
Your mom, did she have a career as well?
No, she was, as they are called today, stay-at-home mom.
And siblings?
Yes, I have an older brother and a younger sister.
Did you grow up in Spain, or did you move around a lot?
Well, because my father worked for the government, my family moved a few times in Europe, mostly Northern Europe, but we stayed in London at one time, and we even lived in India while my father taught there for 2 or 3 years.
When did you move to the United States?
About 12 years ago. I'd been to the U.S. several times as a visitor previous to moving here permanently.
Can you tell us what your first memory was when you started to awaken to this mission in your life?
My first memory is actually from my mother, who told me about a dream I described to her when I was only up to 5 years old. To be honest, I don't remember the dream so much myself, but I do remember my mother describing the dream to me many times over the years, so I feel I remember it quite well through her retelling of the dream to me. The dream was about my interactions with a group of spiritual teachers, but apart from that, what I can only assume was a muddled description of what I had learned in the dream. The thing that particularly impressed my mother was how enthusiastic I was in the telling of the dream. She said that I came downstairs from my bedroom gesturing like an orchestra, a conductor, waving my arms this way and that. It was probably quite a sight, bubbling over with excitement.
It's kind of funny to imagine you in this way. Why do you think this dream was so activating for you?
Well, I don't really know that it was the activating force in my life, but it was important to my mother, and mm-hmm. she felt that this dream had a special meaning. So she, being more philosophically minded than my father and more willing to see these dreams as more than just dreams, she was quite certain that I needed a spiritual education as much as my father was certain that I needed science. So in a way, this dream caught my mother's attention in ways I didn't even appreciate or understand at the time. All I know was that she became more attentive to my spiritual side. For me, after I told the dream, I was probably out catching frogs after breakfast. But for my mother, she became my spiritual guardian in a sense and made sure that I had the books and teachers and time to cultivate my interests in the spiritual side.
You know, was your family, like, you know, were they active in religion?
My father was dutiful in his practice, but he didn't have his heart in it. To him, religion, at least as it was taught in our church, was more of a community service than it was a place to learn things. And he was all about learning new things. For my mother, church was a sacred experience. And again, not so much about learning things from the priest as it was to experience the subtle energies of spirit.
Yeah. You know, from your descriptions, your mom was sort of the one who got you interested in this whole spiritual side of life.
Mothers are often the ones that nurture this aspect of the child. The sensitive mothers often have a closer bond to the child's heart and sense their blossoming, the unsheathing of that etheric antenna transmitter I spoke of earlier. And they tend to share more developmental time with the child as well. As you point out, this was the case with my mother.
Would you like to share any details of the dream?
No. It'd be difficult to express it in a way that would add value to this conversation, Mark. Suffice to say, it made a singular impression on me because I knew, even at that age, that I was part of another group, if you will, or a tribe, on the other side. I knew I was operating in two or more worlds simultaneously, and my education was being directed as much from within as it was in the schoolrooms of our world.
James, when did you think of doing this whole project? You know, and by whole project, I guess I mean the Wingmakers and Event Temples and Lyricus. When did that whole vision kind of come together?
Well, since I was a young child, I knew I was an interpreter. I realized this because I saw in my friends that they lacked this language, and it seemed very odd to me that they instead wanted to think and talk in the language of adults, when the language I heard within myself was so much more engaging, nuanced, and clean and clear. When I turned 9 or 10 years old, I lost this connection. This was during the time when my family moved to India. It was a cultural shift that caused the disconnection, and I became very adept at defining a new voice, the voice of separation, otherwise known as an atheist.
You're going to tell me you were an atheist?
In India, my father was actually more available to me than any other time in my life, and his influence was strong as a result.
Was your father an atheist?
No, he was agnostic, with a strong hope that an intelligent being designed it all, but he was always one step short of the total embrace until he passed. You see, his post in India was quite simple for him, so he had time on his hands. And so I became his pupil of sorts. He also knew that I wasn't enjoying my time in the local schools. It was very hard on me, on all of his children. And perhaps somewhat out of guilt, he made sure that he spent a lot of his time with me and my siblings as well. I dove into the world of science in my mind for the first time in my life. I became the conductor of my worldview. I devoured books on subjects of philosophy and science, and my inner voice gradually became silent in the presence of these great authors. I began to construct elaborate mental theorems and ways to prove to anyone who would listen that God did not exist.
What did your parents do? I assume your mom must have wondered what would happen to you.
She understood. It was just a phase, you see. I needed to feel the point of view of an atheist. I needed to understand their sense of separation and appreciate their intellectual modalities of logic and persuasion.
How long did this phase last?
About 2 years.
What happened to shift you out of it?
I started to interact with my internal world, and it became very obvious to me that something was happening that neither science nor philosophy could explain.
And how old were you at this time?
About 11.
And what kind of experiences were happening?
I prefer not to go into details about this, Mark, but I'll say it was like a reunion with my inner tribe. And I became reacquainted with the reason I incarnated at this time.
Is this when you got the idea for Wingmakers and Lyricus?
And there is always a seed vision for this type of work. Mm-hmm. The seed was given to me through the dream state. And it was my intuitive awakening to the seed that began to bring it forward into my life. It was not like some angelic being sat at the foot of my bed and dictated this vision to me, or pronounced me as one of the chosen few, or that it was clear to me in the span of a single moment or even day. It was the simple, gradual awakening to the vision and why I'd come to this planet within the human instrument. Some artists refer to this muse as the means through which they gain their inspiration or access their vision, their artistic vision. And from my perspective, the muse is one's higher self or presence. It is not an outside force.
Yeah, is this the time that the Wingmakers Project started to crystallize?
It was about this time, yes. But the real impetus for my work came from experimentation. And by this I mean honing the crafts of poetry, music, composition, painting, writing, mm-hmm. and looking at each of these expressions as extensions of myself, my higher self. I knew this would come forward only if it was aligned with the mission I came to serve. At an early age, I had begun to paint. I was quite good at it. But by the time I was 11, I had begun to see my art as more than painting. It became a symbol of the higher frequencies I was in contact with, and as a result, everything else flowed, including the poetry, the music, philosophy, the writings. The paintings became the conductor of the project. Around the time I was 15, I became aware that my experimentation on how these different art forms could be brought together was designed to serve the mythology of the Wingmakers. I understand that the concept of the Wingmakers as a future representation of humankind is difficult to believe for many people. But the word Wingmakers is an encoded word that symbolizes this reality, that a future composite of humanity can indeed interact with its past existence. It's like the symbol of eternity, the Ouroboros, the snake that eats its own tail. The Wingmakers chose me as an interpreter of their reality, our future reality. It's not, in a sense, about their lifestyle or technology, but rather the mere existence and the existence of the Grand Portal as it pertains to human destiny, because it's through the Grand Portal that we, in a sense, reunite with our future selves.
Mm-hmm. Did they give you instructions on what to do or what to create?
No, they did not. They simply brought me into their presence as an invited guest to experience to the best of my ability their vibrational world and the culture therein. Outside of time-space, I'm from the same world, as we all are. Yet very few of us have experienced it, let alone heard of this other reality called our distant future.
Mm-hmm. How would you describe this? Because to me, it's a very hard proposition to get my mind around.
It's a hard thing to describe, Mark. It's a little like an immense line of humans winding its way from the depths of the desert floor to a towering mountaintop. And those at the top of the mountain, they have a video camera, and they pass this miraculous view of the larger world that they see down the line, so that those on the desert floor and every step in between can experience the inspiring view that beckons all of them to ascend, to climb into new territories or new dimensions. It's about as close as I can come to describing it with words, Mark. The future of humanity extends much further on the space-time continuum than its origins arise from history. Why would it seem improbable that our future selves could communicate to our space-time in the 21st century? And not with technical interventions, but simply through the empowerments of a higher, a more encompassing consciousness. One of the truths that will shock humanity in some not too distant future will be the realization that our future collective interacts with our present form much more than we realize. This is a complex subject, Mark, unto itself, because many of the so-called interactions with the Creator and angelic beings or spirit are really interactions with our future selves. It's a collective consciousness. This collective consciousness is symbolically called Wingmakers, or in some distant time, the Elohim, or Shining Ones. But regardless of the name you put to it, it is the quantum collective consciousness of the human species in a far distant space-time, reaching into ours.
How does this happen, that our future selves can contact us, but none of the materials on the planet talk about it? I mean, it seems like our holy books or some gurus would be talking about this. You know, why is it missing from the spiritual literature?
Well, again, the Wingmakers live in mythology. It's a little like the quote attributed to Willie Sutton when he was finally captured. The FBI agents supposedly asked him, "Why do you rob banks?" And Willie said, "Well, because that's where the money is." Well, the Wingmakers live in mythology because that's where the story lives. Information, you see, lives and dies in very short life cycles, like a mayfly whose adult lifespan is measured in minutes. But mythological stories, they live for thousands of years, are translated into hundreds of languages and cultures, and their pulse is just as strong today as it was 1,000 years ago, if you study them. So the Wingmakers represent our future selves just as we represent their ancestral selves. We are, at one level, the same, when you take space-time out of the equation, of course. The future is rendered in obscure mythological stories because our future selves don't want to overextend their help by interfering with our own choices and free will. There are other species, extraterrestrial in nature, that are also linked into our human cause or destiny, and they also want to be helpful, but not preempt our collective vision, because they know already what we have become. And this post-human chrysalis we are currently in is very, very impressionable.
Yeah, so in other words, because our future selves are already known to be like wise and loving beings, no one wants to screw it up by interfering with us? It's sort of like that?
Excuse me, Mark. Yes, but that's a simplification. The human species extends well beyond our current definition of what a human is. As you know, everyone on the blue planet is 99.9% the same in terms of their DNA. And yet if you go to a shopping mall and sit on a bench for an hour or two, you would not say that everyone walking by appears to be a 99.9% identical. There is indeed great variation in the human species in every dimension you can measure it, except DNA. Now, this substance we call DNA is perhaps the most guarded essence in the cosmos because it's the thread that knits time-space to non-space-time. And in that trajectory defines a species' destiny. Just as you can think of DNA as personal to an individual or a family's genetic line, you can also think of DNA as a collective, at a species level, and contained within it is the fuel to reach the central sun of a galaxy. I realize this seems metaphorical, and in part it is, but the essence of what I say is quite literal.
Okay. It's good. I'd like to return to our initial interaction with the Wingmakers. What was the experience that convinced you to develop the materials and mythology?
Yeah, I understand your interest in tracing this back to the headwaters or source material, but as I've already said, it is not contained in a single experience or an aha moment. I'm aware that some people have had this type of sudden awakening where cosmic consciousness floods their human instrument and they are forever changed by the light. In my case, it was less spectacular and more of a gradual succession of events and experiences that shaped my energetic alignment to the Wingmakers.
Mm-hmm. But when you first communicated with them, what was it like?
I'm not trying to be evasive, Mark, but But let me try to explain it like this. Let's say I'm an astronaut, but instead of a spaceship, I make use of my consciousness to explore new space-time dimensions. In doing this, on one journey I stumbled upon the consciousness that was non-terrestrial, operating outside of our space-time, and yet, because of our space-time trajectories, a powerful connection was instantly made, as if it was set up in ancient times with meticulous care. When I first made contact with this collective consciousness, it was obvious that it had an intelligence that dwarfed mine, and yet it was so intimate with my world that it could only be a part of it, either as an observer or an experiencer. As it turned out, it was both. When I first began to interact with this consciousness, what I later came to know as the Wingmakers, I wasn't sure if it was 200, 1,000, 1,000,000, or even 1,000,000,000,000 different entities, but over time it became quite clear that the number wasn't so important as much as the transmissions they provided relative to humanity's destiny.
James, before you go further, let me get clear on this one thing. So the Wingmakers are a composite entity that's in our future, right? And I guess, in other words, we're all in some far distant future going to become unified as one consciousness somewhere in space. and every once in a while, a person like you will project their consciousness far enough into this future space-time and make contact. Is that what you're saying?
It's a complicated exchange of ideas. Let me try it this way. But first, let me be clear that it's no one's shortcoming that this is hard to understand for you or anyone else listening to this dialogue. It's equally hard to describe for me, so I'll take credit for the abstraction, if you will. The Wingmakers have a different frequency of existence, which is to say, they operate without the density of our human instruments at this stage of their existence. But this is different than being discarnate or entities that have left their bodies through death. They still operate in a human instrument. It's just a finer frequency of light or quantum structure. But it's still a sheath or instrument of individuality. One of the byproducts of living in this finer frequency is that the walls between individuality and unity are permeable. So the ability to move between the individual state and the state of union is simply a thought away. Just as we shift thoughts, they can move from sovereign individuality to oneness in consciousness and back again with ease. In the state of oneness, the Wingmakers, as a state of collective consciousness, have an access to the shared holographic records that have been compiled over the species' evolutionary rise from a simple biped to an enlightened, coherent collective, aligned to the frequencies of source intelligence. So with access to this hologram, they can insert themselves into our space-time as an event string. This is carefully engineered to reveal their identities, but always clothed in a mythological context, so they remain meaningful, rather than just informational or worse yet, objects of fear.
What do you mean by that?
You may not realize this, Mark. A few people do, I suppose, but lotus seeds and date palm seeds, they've shown themselves to retain their germinative powers even after 1,000 years. And several years ago, I remember hearing of a date palm seed that was over 2,000 years old that had grown into a tree. So these seeds preserve their powers of life and transformation. Now, the relevance of this is that mythological stories are like these seeds. They retain their potency because they are not trying to be explanatory, but rather meaningful. Everything in today's culture tends to gravitate around explaining what this information means in terms of usefulness. But in the case of the Wingmakers, they're more interested in activating people who are prepared to become sovereign entities, and then to apply this empowerment to their local universe and transform it. If you were to draw a circle around you that extended 15, let's say 20 feet in diameter, that is approximately your local universe. This is your conscious, energetic environment. And in the grand scheme of a multiverse of unlimited scope, it may seem like a pittance, like a tiny particle in a boundless ocean. But in reality, what is contained in this sphere of consciousness is much more than the spatial volume of 4,200 cubic feet, because within this sphere, the dimensions of the multiverse are present. Even though they're not visible to your senses, they are still there. And so you have to think of this spatial volume, the energetic sphere of your local universe, as being the equivalent of a portal that connects you to the multiverse through the presence of your soul. This is the key message that the Wingmakers embed in their mythologies, and this is the key message of my own work as well. The human self possesses a local multiverse whose chief architect and governing intelligence is your quantum presence. And this presence is composed of the fabric of source intelligence. And just as source or creator operates in the non-local multiverse, your presence operates in your local multiverse.
Okay. Can you elaborate a bit on what you mean here? I mean, it seems that what you're saying is that we're gods in our own universe.
Multiverse. The local multiverse is a sphere that contains you, not only your present self, mm-hmm. but the collective energetic frequencies of your incarnations are included in this local multiverse. Your emotional and mental frequencies flow into and surround this multidimensional field. Within your local multiverse, you have domains of consciousness or energetic frequencies that create a federation of consciousness. This federation congeals into what you see right now through your human body. Most people call this consciousness the third dimension or human domain. There are other dimensions, as you well know, and I won't bother to describe them all, but the higher mental domain is one of critical importance, as it's the switchboard between the quantum presence and the emotional domain or heart.
Mm-hmm. When you speak of the quantum presence, are you referring to soul?
Yes, but the definition is placed out of its historical or poetical context into one that's more relevant to our time.
Okay, I can appreciate that, but it's kind of hard to keep up with all the definitions as they seem to change or shift.
The change in vocabulary is not by accident, Mark. It sets a tempo of adaptation and helps to dissolve older paradigms, exchanging them with the new ones that are more aligned to the incoming energies. You notice that even in the time we've been talking, I've shifted from local universe to local multiverse, from higher self to quantum presence. This is the way of our current world. We need to operate in flex and ease in order to allow what is to transpire to transpire. It means that we need to give birth to a new concept one day and dissolve it the next. This may seem like instability or a lack of harmony, but indeed the harmony is in the flexibility to flow with your local multiverse and all that you encounter therein.
Yeah, I kind of feel like we got off the subject. The more personal line of inquiry that I had started, and then we ended up here, which, you know, I like this discussion very much, but I wanted to ask you, do you want to return to the...
I understand, Mark, but spirit brought us here, so let's stay for a while, as there's much more to tell, and I posit that there's much more vital information here than in my personal stories.
Okay, well, that's fine with me. I'll let you steer the interview.
Yeah, I'll suggest that allowing spirit to steer is the better course. The heart anchors the higher frequencies of the quantum presence within the sphere of your local multiverse. In fact, if you drew a dot in the exact epicenter of this sphere, it would lead you to your heart, the focal point of your human self and spiritual consciousness, and its every heartbeat since its very first vibration, before you were even a human form, was activated by the presence of your mortal self. So you see, the quantum presence, in a sense, created you, and it is the true intelligence within your local multiverse. It is the holder of omniscience and omnipotence relative to your local multiverse. And while I say this of you, it's just as true for every human being that walks the earth. Each of us is constructed in the same pattern and possesses a presence. Without it, your heartbeat, your life, would be impossible. Now, this presence needs to create a mesh between the human self and its point of presence, which is above you at the top of your local multiverse, and it envelops your human self, flowing into both your heart and higher mind. As I said earlier, the higher mind is the switchboard that connects the presence with your heart. So it enables this two-way communication and the behaviors of virtue to be expressed through your human self into the human world.
Yeah, but you know, James, not everyone's at the same level. I mean, some people, you know, seem like they discount the soul or quantum presence, as you were putting it, you know, thinking that the mind is the highest authority. So why is this? Why didn't God make it so we'd all be able to connect to this presence with ease?
First of all, the multiverse is in perfection, and every sphere of the human self is part of this perfection, despite how it may appear in the human domain. If you could walk up to anyone and peer into the sphere of their local multiverse at the quantum level, you would see its perfection, because time is not part of the quantum dimension, and it is only time that separates the perfection of the multiverse from the human self. To me, all of your struggles to know your quantum presence, to understand your purpose, to feel an unshakable connection to your creator, these are all in the past. Do you understand?
Yeah, I'm not sure I do, but let's keep going. Maybe something else you say will kind of bring me some clarity.
Well, that's good, Mark. It's wise to let go of those things you don't instantly resonate with or make sense to you. Sometimes releasing this intellectual need to understand things is precisely what brings in the understanding. The interesting thing is that the activation of the presence is a simple process, but rarely acknowledged by the leading spiritual paths on the planet.
And why is that?
It is hard to say, but mostly because it renders the institutional foundation obsolete. For example, if a spiritual path says it's without a founder who had an extraordinary spiritual experience, then the religion seldom evolves into something sustainable. Try to imagine Christianity without the conversion experience of St. Paul, or Buddhism without the enlightenment of the Buddha, or Islam without the rapturous visions of Muhammad. These religions, at their core, require their founders to venture into the mystical heights, and these experiences then become institutionalized as the path. When indeed the experiences were in fact the individual interacting with their presence and tapping into its intelligence, just as any of us can do. But then what happens is the leader is framed outside of humanity with a unique destiny, and to some extent that's true, but the core experience, access to that presence and its innate empowerments, this is absolutely normal and available to all who put forth the effort.
So activating one's presence, you know, are there some specific techniques or approaches that you know, at least work for most people?
The practice of the presence is an important facet of Lyricus, and it's a practice that requires both discipline and patience. The basic framework deals with understanding the relationships of the quantum domain with the mental and emotional domains of the human self. We call this the wholeness paradigm. In our modern world, the intellect and emotions can generate a great amount of discord and incoherence within the local multiverse, and this creates a field effect that can cause an unintended disconnection between the human self and the quantum presence. So this phase of the practice is concerned with emotional coherence leading to virtuous behaviors, and mind attunement leading to surrender. And I mean surrender in terms of allowing your quantum presence to be the governing intelligence over your feeling and thought domain.
How's that done, though? I mean, I know how does one surrender to the presence when it's such an abstraction for most of us?
Excuse me, Martin. It's a perceptive question, and I'm very glad you asked it. First, the discord within the emotional body requires transformation, which is to say, the feelings of anger, frustration, greed, judgment, envy and disappointment, all of these negative emotions are energetic densities, and they accumulate in your local multiverse, and their energies need to be cleared, essentially escorted from your local multiverse. Remember when I was talking about the etheric antenna transmitter?
Yes.
Well, that's what is shut down amid these calamitous frequencies, and that's all they really are, frequencies, the harmonics of disharmony. So in order to clear these accumulated frequencies, one needs to keep open their heart, because the heart is the ground upon which the etheric antenna is planted, and its roots, metaphorically speaking for a moment, they enfold the heart and are supremely sensitive to the heart's frequencies. It is through the practice of the six heart virtues that the presence is invoked, in part. This invocation or practicing the presence, it's not an exact formula. It never is. Some of the ascended masters use specific techniques or decrees, but those within Lyricus, we prefer to only offer the paradigm and let the individual co-create, you know, with their own presence, the optimal way to invoke its governing intelligence into their life.
Yeah, I'm just curious, James, why do you call it the wholeness paradigm?
Well, and this is very important, so please listen carefully here. Because the local multiverse and quantum presence are the core elements of understanding that the individual requires. These are the activating elements of the paradigm. With this understanding of your presence and its local multiverse, you can navigate to wholeness. You really don't require any other teaching or teacher, provided, of course, you're resourceful and patient and persistent and act upon the guidance of your heart and your presence. Within the heart of the individual, prior to their activation or awakening, lives a fragment of first source, but only sufficient in energy to enable the life or entry into the schoolroom of the human domain. It's not in itself powerful enough to propel it instantly into the state of wholeness. This can only be done in steps, and each of these steps is the beckoning from the human self to the presence that surrounds and envelops it. The human heart reaches out to the quantum presence, and in each effort of calling, invoking, appreciating, summoning, believing, praying, loving, its energy is strengthened. Its bond with the presence becomes clearer. Its vision is more encompassing. It allows the presence to be the governing intelligence that pervades the local multiverse, and then you are sovereign. Then you are limitless within your local multiverse, and you see the presence in others even when they cannot.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, I kind of find myself a little lightheaded here. Mesmerized might be another way of putting it. Yeah, I want that, what you were just saying. That's what I want. So what you just described, you know, I mean, that's what I think people want.
Then play with the wholeness paradigm. Play with this paradigm and breathe it into your life. Take the thousand steps of loving and appreciating your quantum presence. There are no shortcuts, because preparations must be made for the merging of your human self with your quantum presence. They exist in different frequencies, and to mesh these frequencies is not something you want to do too quickly. So be kind to yourself and others, and have grace and patience. Each morning, as you arise to enter the schoolroom of your human self, invite your presence to accompany you in all of the geometries of your life, even the mundane and ordinary passages. Feel this bond between your human self and your quantum presence as a partnership ordained by First Source and enabled by your most powerful aspirations as an immortal being. The aspirations that you are afraid to even imagine, for they seem too unlike you, too extraordinary for any human to believe. And yet, here you are, even now, leaning forward with your divine ears, knowing that what I say is indeed your truth. This is resonance. This is how you are guided, how you navigate the local multiverse that is your schoolroom.
Yeah, thanks, James. I don't know exactly why, but of all the things you said today, that one really hit home. I mean, I can feel something shifted inside me just hearing these words. So, but I guess it's the sense of confidence that lacks in me, and probably most people for that matter, that all of this is real. You know, that much of what you just said, I know it's in the Wingmaker's philosophy section, which I've read, you know, over the years. But I don't think I moved the intellectual comprehension, you know, into this hard understanding.
And that is key, Mark, to hold the understanding in all parts of you, not just your head.
Yeah, and you're talking about the 4,200 cubic...
to some extent, but this confidence is really harmony. There's a harmony of understanding, where the local multiverse is harmonious because knowledge and understanding flow with ease. And the individual feels that they have access to every insight or solution they require. That whenever a problem arises, a solution arises hand in hand. Whenever a bad mood budges in, you can dispel it with ease. Whenever a doubt of your presence arises, you have the power to dismiss it. A common way people lose their harmony, and by association, their confidence, is through judgment of oneself and others. And what is the antidote of judgment? It is blessing. Next time you're around a person or a group of people and you find yourself going into judgment, shift your emotions to blessing them. Feel your presence, your 4,200 cubic feet of presence, reach into their local multiverse and overlap in common interest. And that common interest is to exchange blessings as divine beings. This is but one example of how you can transform the discord of doubt to the confidence of harmony. When you hold blessings and project them from your heart center, they expand from your local multiverse without limits. I realize it seems impossible that one individual can radiate blessings from their heart and affect another person thousands of miles away. But our quantum presence is not limited to our human domain and the laws that our human self is subject to, including the laws of time and space. The human self consists of 3 cubic feet, and the presence is 4,200 cubic feet. But as I alluded to earlier, the presence is connected to its source through the umbilical cord of spirit or source intelligence. And it's from this connective thread that the local multiverse is truly infinite, overlapping all others. And this is what is meant by wholeness. One moment, please. Our quantum presence is what navigates our human self to the understanding of personal wholeness. But this desire is only an echo of the real motivation to realize universal wholeness while preserving our individuality.
James, I know we're running low on time, so I wanted to do a quick time check. We'll need to get you to the airport in about 40 minutes, and we're about 20 minutes away. So do you want to stop now or continue for a few more minutes?
Let me add one thing, and then we could...
Oh, and I have one more question, if you're open to it.
Go ahead.
Okay. You know, one of the things I've always felt a certain difficulty in stitching together is the dark side of reality. You know, the The Animus, the secret government operations, the Incunabular Illuminati, all, however you want to call it, and in all these densities of the third dimension. And, you know, I assume this is part of the wholeness paradigm as well, you know, and in light of the planetary shift, what advice do you have for those of us who are kind of flooded with negative news lately?
Well, as I said earlier, this is a literate culture where words rule the day. The language of the mind is words. The language of the heart is feelings. But the language of our presence is behaviors or activity. If you stay in the intelligence of your presence by giving it your attention, then the things that come within your local multiverse that have a, let's say, lower density, they'll have minimal effect, as you can, from the empowerment of your quantum presence, transform them with ease. It's not so much about dissolving discord or eliminating it. It's more about transforming the lower densities through the activity of your presence. And you may or may not be conscious at the human level what your presence does to transform these lower densities. But when you summon your quantum presence to transform densities, you are activating its governing intelligence as though you were switching on a light. Then you step out of the way and you allow your presence to bring you the technique, the thought form, the action, the new behavior to transform the lower density.
Yeah, but again, we're talking about faith or belief. You know, the presence doesn't manifest for our eyes to see, you know, like this column of light and you know, transform the negativity in our life. We have to have faith that it will. And this is the problem most of us have, James. That, you know, everything is invisible. You know, everything that's spiritual is invisible. And unfortunately, everything that's negative, you know, is right in our face, solid, visceral. You know, it's potent and you know, quite magnetic, I might say, in its influence.
Mm-hmm. I understand your perspective, but to worry about the negative is to fret about words and feelings that are not part of the activity of your presence. They're on a line. So I would ask you, do you want to be influenced by your 3-cubic-foot human self or the 4,200-cubic-foot presence that lives within the infinite? I'm aware of the doomsday prophecies, and to some extent, yes, they're accurate. There's a looming global financial crisis and natural disasters that will impinge on a good part of our human population. But we have to remind ourselves that our human self is on a living planet that is part of a living solar system, that is part of a living galaxy, and all of these elements are moving together through time and space. And as we do so, we encounter new frequencies and dimensions. We are not on a treadmill, Mark. This is part of our journey, and we can't control it, no matter how hard we may try, because we're part of a destiny much larger than ourselves as individuals. Notwithstanding that larger reality, what we can control are our behaviors and which intelligence we consciously align to, the intelligence of our quantum presence or the intellect of our human self. Are our behaviors motivated by the transient desires of our human nature, or do they arise from our quantum presence as an outgrowth of our love for our Creator and one another? Each time a person aligns to their presence, they signal an alignment to love, an alignment to First Source, and an alignment to all creaturehood. While this may not manifest in the physical spectrum of phenomena, a density for the benefit, really, of your eye-brain, I might add, it manifests in your sense of coherence, your sense of outflowing love, your sense of multidimensional relationships, your sense of guidance, your sense of resilience in the face of discord, your sense of connection to others. So tell me, are these states of being less or more compelling than those negative, visceral manifestations? manifestations you mentioned.
Yeah, I think I'll just remain silent and let you have the last word, James. But I do know we need to get you to the airport.
I have several parting comments, and given the amount of time remaining, I'll do my best to be concise, Mark. We've talked about the quantum presence and its role as the hub of the wholeness paradigm. I've mentioned that the presence is the governing intelligence of your local multiverse. I've spoken of the importance in seeking to activate the communication between our human self and quantum presence. And now I want to say that there is more than simply activating and understanding the wholeness paradigm. There is also the ongoing evolution and preparation of the local multiverse through the quantum presence. And this requires self-discipline or self-management. When you summon your quantum presence to direct your local multiverse, you are activating its power into your human life. And this power is very potent. Its potency requires that you bring balance to your life, that you operate in harmony. If you do not, the power of your quantum presence can intensify your imbalance or disharmony. I say this not as a warning so much as a point of clarity. If your human self operates in a sober clarity with balance, managing its emotional and mental bodies with ease and balance, then the power issued from your quantum presence can radiate from you and have profound effect, not only in your own multiverse, but others as well. If you call on this power, but then proceed to conduct your life in emotional disorder, or give your attentions to the transient pleasures of life according to your intellect or ego, then you may intensify your disorder or your desire for the material aspects of life. When this occurs, your quantum presence withdraws. The flow is constricted as if a tourniquet is applied to your spiritual nature, and the circulation of the higher frequencies is diminished. My point is that if you practice the presence, you must be vigilant to also practice harmony in your feeling world and attunement in your mental domains. The governing intelligence of your quantum presence requires behavioral intelligence in your human self. It's the only way to secure the full empowerment of your spiritual nature. For those wanting shortcuts or an easy pathway to enlightenment, you won't find it here. And in my experience, you won't find it anywhere, despite what you might hope for. The quick and easy pathways leads to the astral domains of the phenomenalistic. And to those serious students, it's simply another detour leading away from sovereignty and freedom. Excuse me. The darkness that embraces our planet is the accumulation of human discord. Densities upon densities upon densities have settled upon the human domain like sediment on the ocean floor. When it's stirred up, but the light is obscured, the layers of greed and war, jealousy, anger, misunderstanding, racism, fear, hatred, they've all interleaved and created this darkness. For some it is normal. For those who are awakened, it is repugnant. And many of you I know are tired of waiting for the promised changes, for the shift to a love-dominated world where people of all colors, creeds, and beliefs can live in harmony and co-creation. The components of darkness are entities unto themselves. So there is an entity of war, an entity of greed, and so forth. But these entities are becoming every day a little weaker, less potent. And what is getting stronger is the collective consciousness of humanity. There will come a time when the collective intelligence of humanity subdues the entities of war, greed, racism, and fear, and essentially evicts them from the planet. May not happen as quickly as some would like, but this is the path we are committed to. If you feel fatigue and impatience, invoke your quantum presence to uplift you and provide you with resilience and determination. You are empowered beings. You are able to do miraculous things, even amid a small amount of doubt. But do your best to release your doubts and limitations. The human imagination is equally effective in arguing for its limitations as it is in envisioning its freedoms and powers. There's one last comment I would make. It would be to contemplate the wholeness paradigm. I haven't defined it completely because you are the artisans of that endeavor. I've provided some clues and a modest framework, but the visualization is a key element of this paradigm. Activating your imaginative powers is the muscle of the paradigm. Surround yourself with music and art and culture and loving relationships. Bring these into your local multiverse and let them inspire your imaginative powers. I would encourage you to participate in the event temples when they're launched. There will be 7 temples in total, and these will be released over the next 4 years. If you can participate in the event temples, it will help you exercise your quantum presence because you will be part of a quantum community who collectively is radiating love and compassion to those in need. Mark, it's been a wonderful time with you. Thanks for all your patience in letting me wind my way through your questions. Your attentiveness and patience is greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, James. On behalf of all those listening, we're really grateful for your willingness to make this information available. Your words are inspiring and very practical as well, I think. This concludes our 3-part interview with James. I, for one, certainly hope there'll be more. And then on to the airport, James. Oh. Signing off.
Well, blessings to you all. From my heart to yours.